You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
For many people, proper etiquette is a rather old-fashioned 19th century notion, but even in 2011, there are ways to be tactful and appropriate, and good manners still matter even in the digital world. On this week's Please Explain, we're giving etiquette a reboot for the 21st century, and we're joined now by two sisters whose very names will be forever associated with the subject, two great-great-granddaughters of Emily Post. Anna Post is the author of Do I Have to Wear White?, published by William Morrow, and Lizzie Post is the author of How Do You Work This Life Thing?, an advice book for 18 to 25-year-olds, published by Morrow as well. And they both work for the Emily Post Institute and are co-authors of the 18th edition of Emily Post Etiquette, published by HarperCollins. And I'm very pleased to welcome them to our show. And we invite your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can also leave us a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. On these Please Explain segments, we usually start with the absolute basics. So with that in mind, how do you define etiquette? And is it the same as it was when your great-great-grandmother was writing about it?
The idea of etiquette, yes, is the same. It's a very timeless one in the way that she thought about the larger picture of it, the idea of how you treat people, that you treat them with consideration, with respect, with honesty. Very cross-cultural, very, very timeless. That would be as familiar to her as it is to us today, but the manners do tend to change, yes.
Well, in the old days, there were all sorts of rules about how you introduce somebody to somebody, and whether if somebody was older than you, if we were introducing a woman to a man or a man to a woman, pretty much all of that has fallen by the wayside. We're happy today if we're standing there, if the person next to us says, oh, by the way, here's, I'd like you to meet Leonard Lopate.
I'm happy if they remember my name.
No, it's true. You know, there is still, especially in business, that you want to introduce the more important person by saying their name first. You're introducing the other person to them. But for the most part, it's really just make the introduction, make it happen.
My big problem is I often forget the name of the person that I recognize the face of. So I'll just say something like, I'd like you to meet so-and-so. And then hope that the other person will
says their name,
fills in the blank.
Provide the name.
It's totally okay to ask for that name, you know.
is etiquette the same thing as good manners?
They're a little bit different. Etiquette is more what we describe as the principles that Anna was just talking about, the consideration, respect, and honesty. And the manners really come depending on time and culture, and they do change over time. So the manners, you know, are sort of the little things like a handshake versus a bow versus a kiss on the cheek, whereas the principles of etiquette, treating people with consideration, that stays the same.
Well, but it's also different in different countries. If you're in France and somebody kisses your hand or you do the air kisses and all that, it means something different. If somebody kissed my hand in this country, I would really be freaked out.
Oh, well, and you go back long enough, and how you kissed the hand said all different kinds of things. You know, like long, long ago, there was the etiquette of a fan, and how you held it sent different messages. We're sort of past that now. Now I think that gets expressed through emoticons, but...
Yeah, well, now the big issues involve email and smartphones and text messages and Facebook and Twitter and online dating. And they're all presenting new, unique challenges on how we communicate with each other. Do you think that we need new rules for good etiquette in our digital lives?
I don't think that we need new rules. I think we need to remember that the basic rules of communication apply even when you're communicating through a smartphone, through a computer, that it doesn't matter. You still want to be respecting the person. You want to be trying to communicate effectively, you know, what it is you're trying to say. And through type, that doesn't always come across perfectly.
You know, it's not a reinvention of the wheel. It's a new platform for continuing to communicate with other people. The difference is you don't always see them face to face. There's a computer screen or an iPhone screen or whatever device you like in between. And I think that's somewhere at times where the disconnect can come.
But we also assume that these devices make people available all the time. Sometimes they don't check their email or check their voicemail, or even more annoying, because they can see your name often on their phone. They don't answer the phone, and you could take it personally.
You got to try not to.
You have to try not to, and it's all part of, you know, sort of monitoring your life now with different tools. That's all. And the the digital world really is just a natural extension socially of what we've done for a very long time. Before, you might have simply told somebody that you were out instead of taking their old handset phone call instead. So it's just sort of a progression of many of the same old tricks.
I could imagine in Emily's day, your butler would say, "She's not available at the moment."
Well, if you have a butler today, you probably kill
There's another difference.
Things
in
are
the
a little
times.
Different.
Mom's not in right now.
Exactly.
It's the same thing,
exactly.
Isn't it? Well, people are often more casual in how they communicate digitally. Mm-hmm. Are those drawbacks to good manners? Or an advantage?
Depends on how you use them, right?
It really can be. You know, I think it has to be situationally appropriate. And There are still things in our world that deserve a little formality. Formality is one of the ways that we show respect for other people. Those are still tied together. However, yes, we are a more casual society. And I don't think that's a bad thing. You can still be respectful of others while wearing blue jeans or using slang. Yeah.
Well, sometimes when I'm responding to some email that I find slightly unpleasant, I will write something really snarky, and then I'll think, nah.
Do you delete?
And then I erase the whole thing.
Yeah, that's actually a great practice to do, is sometimes get it out, think about it for a second, delete it before you hit send.
Smartphones are now a huge part of our lives. Is it acceptable to check your iPhone when you're having dinner with someone?
Generally, I would say no. And I know that's a little bit of a world rocker because people do it all the time. Mm-hmm. I get that it happens, but...
They hide it under the table?
Well, they'll put it right on the table like it's another utensil that you need to have your meal. But the thing for me is, if you've given your time to another person, I think most people agree with this concept that the doing of it is what gets harder. You really need to give your full attention. Attention's another way we show respect. You divide that, and I think you diminish the respect.
But there are times when you have to check your email because you're expecting some important message. So how do you do that in a polite way?
If there's some kind of an emergency, let's say kids at home sick, you want to make sure the babysitter can get a hold of you, or it's a work thing, it's okay to say, you know, if you don't mind, I'm going to have my phone on vibrate in my pocket. There's a chance I'm expecting a call, or there's a chance an emergency could come up. And that's not just any emergency. It's, you know.
Use your judgment.
Yeah, use your judgment. But that's the way to handle it. You don't want it sitting on the table like a ticking time bomb.
My guests are Anna Post, author of Do I Have to Wear White, which is published by William Morrow, Lizzie Post, author of How Do You Work This Life Thing, also from William Morrow, and they both work for the Emily Post Institute, co-authors of the new 18th edition of Emily Post Etiquette, which is published by HarperCollins. And we're taking your calls at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a message on our show page at WNYC.org. And do people call you Emily by accident?
All the time.
Yes, sometimes in very public forums like national TV or radio. So thank you for getting our names right.
A listener from Brooklyn wrote in with this experience. I once went on a date with a guy from OkCupid. It wasn't going well, but in the middle of dinner, he starts looking at other people's profiles on his phone in front of me. I didn't know what to do. What should the listener have done? Other than have gotten up
and
left.
I would have said, you know, this has been really nice, but I think I'm going to head out now. It was great to meet you. Thanks. Bye.
I like Anna's response.
That's the very polite version of it. But you can cut it short right then. It's a first date and they're being that disrespectful. You don't need to hang out, but I think you have to exit with some tact.
Yeah. But with online dating, we meet people differently. Sometimes somebody will say, pick me up at my home. Mm-hmm. The door opens and you see the absolute worst artwork you ever imagine anybody could stick on a wall. Do you just simply say, oops, wrong door?
I think you try to be polite. You try not to judge people right off the bat, but instead spend a minute getting to know them. If it doesn't work, a lot of people understand that with the online dating and through that first date, it's not always going to work out.
You know, I actually did some online dating quite a few years ago, I think 2005, on Match.com.
We're not going to check on you.
No, the profile's gone. You can't find it anyway. But when I did that, you know, I always said, all right, if I'm going to meet this person, then I'm going to be a good first date for this date. Yep. And when it's done, then we can go our separate ways. But
what happens when the person's picture doesn't sync up with what they turn out to look like?
I think if it's drastically different, you can certainly say, so.
Yeah, what happened here?
Do I have the right person?
Text messaging has actually wound up being the coward's way out of all sorts of things. is it, if you do want to say goodbye to somebody or say something really important Do you have to say it face-to-face?
You should try for face-to-face, if not over the phone.
Yeah, the text message, it's too brief, it's too impersonal, and it's far too casual. You know, that's what you send when you're running late or you need somebody to pick up more milk at the store. It's not for breaking up.
Yeah.
Are text messages ever better than a phone call or an email?
Depends on the situation.
Sure, could be. I mean, technology isn't some horrible demon. It's incredibly convenient, and there are times where conveniency wins out. Exactly, you're running late, you need milk at the store. But conveniency shouldn't always be the priority, and I think that's where we need to start to split hairs.
Yeah.
The cell phones allow you to make calls pretty much all the time, although you can make them on the subways in Paris but not in New York. Some people think it's all right to talk into them at any time. I've walked down the street behind somebody involved in a very personal conversation more than once. So what are the guidelines for using cell phones in public?
I think there's a little bit of personal choice in that. I mean, there are some people who will walk down the street, you know, and they do wind up getting into a screaming fight or crying about their latest breakup or something like that. But at the same time, I do think you need to look at time and place, and you need to think about, like, the elevator, really bad time to have that, you know, guess what we did last night, ooh, conversation, you know. Think about your audience. Think about who you're trapping.
Do you think that people who engage in those kinds of conversations are unaware that it might bother others, or
they don't care? You just struck the jackpot, the A word, unaware. Well, awareness, rather, in this case, unawareness. That, to me, is the spark that starts the division between potential for rudeness and really getting it right.
Yeah.
I think a lot of most people, and I would say this of any place in the country, I don't think most people wake up intending to be rude. They do it because they get busy. They get distracted, be it by technology or their busy day, traffic, what have you. And that's when they start thinking about themselves, their priorities, what they need to get done. The blinders go on, especially with that cell phone call to the people around you. And you get that tunnel vision going on. But I don't think most of the time those people were intending to offend the other people on the street.
A business email requires a different tone and style than a personal email to a friend. What are the most important things to keep in mind when you're writing a business email? In the old days, there were very rigid formats. And I don't know, I haven't seen this recently, but there was a time when I'd be writing a letter and my computer annoyingly would say, "Are you writing a letter? Do you need help?"
Oh, I remember that.
Yes, I'm glad we're past those days. When you're writing a business letter, you know, again, it needs to be appropriate depending on the industry you're in. You may never be formal in that industry, so I get that there's a difference. When you are on the more formal side, you do need to use the salutation. Dear, you need to use full sentences in this age of abbreviations. Punctuation, check the grammar, check the spelling. All of those things do matter, and even the structure of it, you know, the beginning and the opening, the sort of opening pleasantries, the meat of the conversation. It's almost like a novel in mini. You have to walk them through all the stages and close off. It's more like classic correspondence as opposed to the email you may have with your colleague down the hall from you. That seems more like a transcript of a verbal conversation.
No matter how much care we use, we still inevitably make mistakes with email, like hitting reply all instead of reply, or we think we're forwarding a message and we're actually sending it to the person who sent us the original message.
Yep.
And we say something like, "How do I get rid of this creep?" or something. How do you deal with that? Is there a way of saying, "Gee, I really screwed up here"?
You know, apologies aren't dead, my friend. They still exist, and saying I'm sorry. Really taking the time, though, first before you hit send to check, you know, who you're sending it to, what's in that subject field, what did you write?
A listener writes, "It's important to cut people some slack, especially if there's a history of goodwill. It's so easy to be miffed over something written in an email. There's no vocal inflection, no body language. There's very little ability to emphasize or diminish meaning and nuance. Email is mechanical, and could somebody invent something to make it any better, I wonder?"
Well, some people think the emoticon can add that in, although, frankly, if you're in business, unless you know the person really well, it will look juvenile most of the time. There's a great article in the New York Times a couple years back about how we interpret digital communication, emailed communication, and the upshot was, unless the sense of the email, the emotion of the email was 100% clear, we will assume the worst. We'll assume there's a problem. We'll assume that they're mad. Pick up the phone in that case. Better yet, see them in person so that you get back all that extra information in the communication.
It's one of the things you can do, of course, is also italicize so that you're kind of putting inflection
yes.
into your message.
Exclamation point.
Although the all caps is really dated, unless it's congratulations. Leave
yeah.
that one alone.
We have to take a little break. If our listeners have any questions about digital communication or etiquette in general, we're inviting your calls. Give us a call at 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. My guests are the Post sisters, Anne Post and Lizzie Post. They've both written their own books, and they have also co-authored the 18th edition of Emily Post's Etiquette. And there's still plenty of things that that book addresses that could apply, and people may have questions about those as well. So we invite your calls or your comments, but first we have to take care of a little bit of business. Stay with us. We're back with Anna and Lizzie Post, sisters and authors of books on etiquette. Anna's is Do I Have to Wear White? Lizzie's is How Do You Work This Life Thing? Both of them published by William Morrow. And they have also co-authored the new 18th edition of Emily Post Etiquette, which is published by HarperCollins. We're taking your calls at 646-829-3985. You can also leave a message on our show page at WNYC.org. And before we get to the callers, just one more thing. And in going over your great-great-grandmother's book, did you find things that still are universal, that have not changed at all since the book was originally published, what, in 1859?
Forks always on the left.
Is that it?
No.
People don't worry about the fish fork anymore.
No, not so much.
Yeah, a lot of those basic courtesies, pleasantries, not interrupting others, saying please and thank you, standing up to shake hands, a lot of that really is tried and true.
A listener just recently sent me a complaint that we say welcome to our show and thank you so much. He said, get on with it. We all know that you're happy to have the guest. And my feeling is that I'd feel uncomfortable if I didn't say thank you or welcome to our show.
I'm with you.
I think it's a really nice courtesy, form of respect to the listeners, thanking them for participating.
As a guest, I know Anna and I always say thank you. It's been a pleasure to be on, that sort of thing. We like it when
even when it hasn't been a pleasure?
It's always a pleasure.
Okay. We go now to our first caller, Robert from White Plains. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Yes, Robert.
I was just saying, my wife and I threw a formal dinner party, our first one ever, and we actually put out place cards. And I was going to seat couples facing each other across the table. And my wife said, no, you're supposed to sit couples next to each other. And so, of course, we did, but I'd like to know why.
Well, actually, don't you think that the rules are different for different people? I have been seated next to my companion. I have been seated totally across the room. Different people have different eyes about that. But the old-fashioned way was to not seat couples together, wasn't it?
Right. You wanted to separate couples so that they had a chance to talk to other people. Technically, the real old-fashioned rule was unless they had just gotten engaged.
Yeah. Now we've all been in situations, I suspect, you've had this experience, Robert, where you've been seated next to people you would have preferred not to talk to. It would have been a great if you had been seated next to your wife.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's convenient to be able to whisper certain things to your partner. But, you know, I was of a mind.
Like, do you believe that dress?
That's their name.
I'm thinking, you're whispering at the table? No, I'm just kidding.
Well, you
whispering,
know, surreptitiously,
is bad.
As I wipe my mouth with the napkin, you know, surreptitiously, you know, making a comment.
Oh, you're sneaky.
So what is the answer?
The answer nowadays is that, yeah, you can do any of the above. You can certainly still split up couples. The idea mostly is that you want to, if you are doing a seating chart, seat people near others you think they might have a good time talking with, that might stir up conversation. And it doesn't have to be boy-girl anymore either. Yeah.
But what about if you're seated next to somebody who does not seem to want to talk to you? They just are talking to the person to their left. And because I was always told that you try to divide your time equally between the person to your left and the person to your right. And so you see them, they're just talking away, and you turn to them at a certain point to let them know that you're happy to join them, and they ignore you. You go back to this other person who you may have already blown all of your thoughts.
There's not much you can do if they are ignoring you, and that is their bad. You know, what you were taught is right. You do want to try to divide your time, and also with the people across from you. But there isn't much you can do if they're not engaging you at all, and that just makes them look bad. People see that you've tried.
Very classic etiquette. Long time ago, not any longer, the hostess would begin by speaking to their honored guest on their right-hand side through about half of the meal, and it was called, when the phrase turn the table came from this. When you would turn the table, the hostess would then say, well, it's been lovely chatting, and turn to the person on her left, and then everybody else down the row would
to do
flip
same.
To the other partner.
We have a question from Laura from Brooklyn, who asked on our show page, what's the appropriate lag time when responding to email and text? Does every digital communication warrant a response? And what's the polite way to handle someone who seems to engage in a text conversation with frequent brief texts? Just the back and forth, back and forth.
The back and forth, back and forth. I mean, that's one where if you're the other party and you're bothered by it, you know, you can say, I can't talk right now, either if you're texting with them. If you're the person who's not texting, but the person you're with is in this little quick text conversation, if it's a close friend, use a little humor, you know, like, hey, who are you talking to here?
Well, is there a point, I know I've been in this situation where there's been a back and forth, and after a while you realize that this is taking a lot more time than if we just simply talked on the phone.
Yeah, you can always just simply ask the other person, hey, could you just give me a quick call?
Yeah.
And even if you text that to them, because you can call them and they might not pick up, as we've discussed.
It might not be the right time.
But give them a call or ask for a call instead.
I also have the feeling that sometimes this can lead to friends stopping being friends, because the message could be rather hard, but if you were having a conversation, there'd be a lot more give and take, mm-hmm. and there would be more of a chance to work things out. So are we actually in a situation now where we're making things more difficult for us to communicate, even though it's so easy to?
It can be. You know, more options do add complexity to any situation, and I think being able to have a healthy, just like a healthy diet, have a healthy mix of all of the above, and I think your relationships will do just fine. Otherwise, yeah, you may have someone who's so busy with work or with new kids that they're texting all the time, and you might not invite them for coffee as often. That's okay.
Let's take another call. Lisa from New York. Hi, you're on the air. Lisa?
Hello. Hi. Oh, I'm driving, so I have to be very quick. I have
That's part of the etiquette problem, isn't it?
Yeah.
That may be a safety problem.
When a salon owner owns the salon, and he or she does all of your business, you know, takes care of your services, what do you think about tipping?
That's one where traditionally we would have said you don't actually tip the salon owner, but nowadays we actually say the best thing to do is ask if they receive tips or find out. And if you're afraid to ask them directly, you can ask the receptionist, you know, does Kelly take tips or does she take tips, that sort of thing.
And you can always choose to tip. There's a woman that I see who owns her salon, and I don't tip every time I see her, but I do sometimes because I know that it's appreciated, especially, you know, in the economy that we have right now. But traditionally, no, not for a salon owner.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
I think that applies to all sorts of things, like men getting haircuts as well.
Sure, but yeah.
Yes.
Our number here is 646-829-3985. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. A listener asked, what about commenting online? People often write things in internet forums about things, people and other things that they would never say in person.
This is such a hot topic right now, and it does bother a lot of people, and that's the good news, is that it bothers a lot of people that it's happening. One of the things that you start to see in any type of chat room, you know, not really chat room, but comment string on a blog, you will start to see regulars in that community starting to self-police a little bit. And if anything, of course, is really egregious, then the administrators will take it down, and they should, especially if it's, you know, truly, truly inappropriate. But yeah, the seeding with either inappropriate comments or angry comments, trolling, those kinds of things, no, it's not okay. And yes, it does happen, but most people don't like this, and most of the communities don't like it enough that they'll police it out of their space.
We also have lots of other things changing. For example, our social spheres have expanded dramatically over the last 10 years with the rise of Facebook and Twitter. Mm-hmm. Do you think there are different rules for dealing with a Facebook friend who you met once at a party and someone who's your real friend?
Yeah, I think it depends a little bit on how you interact. I mean, there are some friends who I'm very, very close to. We're friends on Facebook, but we don't Facebook that much with each other, whereas other friends I've only met once or twice, but they're great Facebook friends. We participate in each other's walls, et cetera.
But I wonder now, because I'm just bombarded with LinkedIn requests.
Yes.
Sometimes I recognize a person, sometimes I don't. Yeah. Sometimes a person is a real friend. Mm-hmm. In some cases, it's somebody I kind of know. And I wonder whether it's insulting to reject that person.
Not necessarily with LinkedIn, especially because it's about a business relationship. Rather than just a casual acquaintance you meet just once, sure, add them onto the Facebook page. If you don't interact, fine, no big deal. On LinkedIn, because someone might actually contact you about doing business with that person, I like to have a sense for who they are. I like to feel that I actually know them. So no, to people that I really don't know, I won't respond on LinkedIn. I don't feel that it's about the numbers, it's about the relationships.
I'm not even sure what LinkedIn is all about. I know I accept, I reject, and then that's the end of that.
Is that why you haven't accepted my friend request?
One of the things with it, a lot of people do network and get jobs through this and can be a great way to make connections, get clients.
Yeah.
Well, I don't want to admit to the fact that I'm looking for a job. Michelle from New Jersey, hi, you're on the air.
Hi. This idea just came into my head when I heard you speaking about relationships breaking down. I have a very good friend who has taken to emailing all correspondence to me, and I'm a phone call person or a phone person. And most recently, we were at dinner face-to-face, and she had told me she felt I was neglecting our relationship and that she was going through a very rough emotional time. And I think it was very interesting because I said, how could I tell that from an email?
Good for you to say that. in some ways you could tell her, I think you're right, it is harder to tell from an email. And I might say to her, wow, I was really feeling kind of the same way because I'm so used to us talking over the phone and I really miss that. You know,
Absolutely. Let's
get together. Let's support each other.
The best part is that you're talking now about it. And, not all talking with friends will be the polite, genteel conversation. It shouldn't. We're far more interesting than that. And sometimes you do have to have a chat like that with a friend. But it's worth having. And it shows that I think that you both value each other.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And I think I was actually insulted because every time I made a phone call, I got an email response.
Oh, that's never fun. Yeah. Phone call should be responded with a phone call, hopefully.
With a phone call, exactly. But we did over a good bottle of wine and a nice dinner. Solve it.
Good.
So, that helps everything.
Yeah. It's really hard to have a good bottle of wine over a Twitter.
Exactly.
Over, what is that, a tweet?
Tweet.
Although if it's a tweet wine, I like mine dry. Thank you so much for calling us, Melanie. Liz from Manhattan. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi.
Go ahead, Liz.
Hi. Okay, I have a problem. I am periodically in situations at cocktail parties where I end up in a conversation with someone I really don't want to spend much time with, and they seem to want to spend a lot of time with me. So question is, how does one graciously get out of that situation? And then if one walks away and is standing there alone and that person appears closely again, how do you continue to be gracious but not have to talk to them?
This is a problem I think almost every person has at a party.
So universal. I teach business etiquette seminars across the country, and when we talk about business social, this might be the number one question that comes up. It's happened to me, to everybody. I like short and sweet. They have to draw breath at some point, and then you just get in. It's been a pleasure chatting, if you'll excuse me. Here's the danger with a lot of the excuses. I need another drink. Oh, excuse me, I have to go to the ladies' room. In my experience teaching, I have participants in seminars raise their hand and say, mm-hmm, they followed me to the bar. They followed me right into the restroom.
Well, you could also say, I see somebody else who I have to talk to. Isn't that okay?
If you do.
You could.
One, you're going to have to go over and start a conversation.
Two, it does run. If it's authentic, sure, that's great. Otherwise, it runs the danger of saying, excuse me, I see somebody more important than you.
Yeah. Right. Well, this is a problem. There's somebody I don't enjoy seeing at parties because whenever I talk to her, I always feel she's looking over my shoulder, looking to see if there's somebody there who's more important than I am.
Oh, I hate that.
And then there's a lot of etiquette at parties. There's a whole matter of a group of people engaged in an interesting conversation that you would like to join into, but they don't seem to be welcoming you into the conversation.
Oh, I hate that, too.
That's the worst. Golden rule with this one. Eye contact is maybe your best friend here. Mm-hmm. Once you make eye contact with somebody, that's a real sign of acknowledgement in our culture, and it's a lot harder to ignore someone. However, if I'm getting the cold shoulder, I'm going to find a conversation elsewhere or even try a different side of it if there's several people. But
could
you,
you just jump in and say, oh, yeah, I had that experience, too? And
sure.
Force,
I would interject.
Force yourself?
Yeah, if you really want to be part of it, then yes, get in there and give it a go. If they cold shoulder you after that, I might go elsewhere. But sure, they may be, again, that tunnel vision, that lack of awareness. They may just be a little oblivious.
I would also say conversation karma can help out. So when someone joins your group, make sure that you're welcoming and inviting and say, what's your opinion? You know, what do you think about this?
And if you want to join the conversation, our number here is 646-829-3985, or you can leave a comment on our show page. Steve from New York, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, how you doing?
Go ahead.
Enjoy your show, by the way. I wanted to relate an incident I had a couple of weeks ago. I was in a restaurant with my wife, and they sat us down at a table with a fellow at the next table over who was on his cell phone. And he was talking like he was in his own private apartment. Mm-hmm. Everybody around him could hear him. So I asked the waitress if they could please have him turn off his cell phone. So when she did that, he kind of laughed and kept on with his conversation. So then I called over the manager, and he asked the fellow to turn over off his cell phone. And he would not listen to the manager. And what ended up happening was the manager apologized and seated me at a table at the other side of the restaurant. And on this fellow's way out, he confronted me, and we almost had a fight in the restaurant until the manager physically threw him out of the restaurant. So cell phones are a particularly egregious situation.
But don't you think that man, who sounds to me like a belligerent person, would have been angry on some other level? I mean, he sounds
probably
like the kind of guy who gets into fights.
I think there's something else going on there. And you did all of the right things. You know, you ticked right down my list.
Seriously.
If A doesn't work, go to B. If B doesn't work, go to C. And the restaurant handled it correctly, too. I might have encouraged him to move along a little bit earlier because clearly he wound up in a pretty inappropriate place.
Thank you so much for your call.
Okay, thank you, guys.
That's a good story.
And we have Michael from Williamsburg on the line now. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
Just a quick question for you. It's about wedding etiquette. And this is a question that constantly comes up with my group of friends who are getting married. Who gets a plus one and who doesn't?
This totally depends on the hosts. It's really up to them to decide who gets a plus one. Typically, if you are living with a significant other, that requires a plus one. You know, I live with my current boyfriend. I get a plus one to a wedding, typically. But everybody else, you know, if you don't have a plus one on that card, you do not invite someone with you.
Absolutely.
Yeah, married couples, engaged, living together or not, their package deal, that goes the other way, too.
Yeah.
Whether you like the package deal, whether you know the package deal, they come together, but just classic.
And then there are the kids. So sometimes people insist on bringing their kids to the wedding when the bride and groom really would prefer not to have children in attendance.
And family, or if it lists the children's name. If those kids' names are not on there, I would not bring my children.
The final place to look to know exactly who's invited is the inner envelope. If there isn't one, then the outer envelope covers it all.
Now, before you go, I just want to ask you a couple of questions about the family history. Did your great-great-grandmother pass on her ideas about etiquette to the succeeding generations of the family, to your great-grandmother, your grandmother, and your mother? Is this something that connects you to genetically to etiquette?
We've got the etiquette gene. She passed it on to our grandfather's wife, or grandmother, and then that was passed on to Peggy, our aunt. And then they opened it up to our generation as well.
Here's the thing. I mean, there's nothing I can do with a fork
that
you can't do with a fork. There's no innate gene. But, yeah, as a conversation, it's been part of the family for a long time, for sure.
Well, I've been looking at the Etiquette in Society and Business and Politics and Home that was published in 1922, and it has rules like The younger person is always presented to the older or more distinguished person, as in, Mr. Distinguished, may I present Mr. Younger Person. But a gentleman is always presented to the lady, even if he is an older gentleman or a man of great distinction.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
We don't live by those rules anymore.
No, although I will say when I would help my mom pass, you know, hors d'oeuvres at a party when I was a little girl, I was instructed to go to my grandmother first, yep. Which is sort of a little bit of a holdover from that.
Respect your elders.
Thank you both so much for being with us. I've been talking to the Post sisters. Is it okay if I call you that?
Absolutely.
Sure.
Anna Post and Lizzie Post. They Anna's book, Do I Have to Wear White? Lizzie's is How Do You Work This Life Thing? And both of them published by William Morrow. They also have co-edited the 18th edition of Emily Post Etiquette, which is published by HarperCollins. It's been a lot of fun.
Thank you.
Thank you.
It's been a pleasure being on with you.